I'd also give an award to our very first guest who's ready to rock and roll with us. He is the one, the only. He's Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio. Adam, always a pleasure to have you on. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Andy. I got to ask, how come they've never had a comedy category for the Oscars?
It's a wonderful question. I'm 150% in on that because I think that year Happy Gilmore probably would have won. It would have been a really tough, very, very difficult race back in 2008 because you had two comedy pieces of pure 100% gold going head-to-head in 2008 in Tropic Thunder and Step Brothers.
Oh, that's right.
Now, I think the prevailing popular thought would have been Step Brothers, but I just don't know that Tropic Thunder really gets the respect that it so rightfully deserves. I mean, I'm not sure what the odds would have been back in 2008 on that, but I think that might have been the tightest rate in the history of comedies, if indeed that was a category at the Oscars. Just saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think the mid-90s, I mean, there were so many great comedies in the mid-90s, right in the Jim Carrey heyday. I don't know, I think some of those would have been pretty competitive, too.
Yes, Jim Carrey, King Farley, of course, was around in the mid-90s also, and there were a lot of very, very good comedies that came out in the 90s, but maybe that's something we could table for a different date. They came up with a comedy category at the Academy Awards. We could go year by year. That would help. Yeah, we could fill some serious
time
with that.
That's a whole show right there.
It is. All right, well, we didn't bring you on to talk about that. We brought you on to talk about a host of different topics. And earlier this week, you put up an article on the Daily Fantasy League picks for this weekend's Rocket Mortgage Classic in Detroit. A lot of guys have already finished up day one at the Detroit Golf Club. And we head into the weekend. This is still a pretty decent field, Adam. It's not as good as the last couple of weeks have been, but it makes for some interesting TV, I think. And as you take a look at this Rocket Mortgage Classic from a handicapping perspective, who do you like in this week's field?
Well, I'll tell you what. They said that they were going to make the rough a little bit thicker here for this year's event because last year the cut line was 5-under. It was the highest cut line since 2016. And based on some of the scores today, it doesn't really look like that's wound up happening. Leaders at 7-under here so far. Bunch of guys at 6-under, 5-under, stuff like that on down. But you know, a couple of guys I thought were pretty interesting here this week. One of them is Kevin Kisner, and Kevin Kisner actually 5-under through 15 at this point, so he's two shots off the lead, chance to maybe be the first-round leader here. A guy that putts really, really well, and last year, with all those low scores, this thing basically just became a putting tournament. Every par 5's a birdie hole. It was really about par 4's and making your putts and getting out with a 3 instead of a 4. So last year it was a putting tournament. This year it's kind of been a little bit more of a shot-makers tournament, at least through the first round. But Kevin Kisner, traditionally about a top 30 putter on the PGA Tour, guy that doesn't hit it super far, but he stays in the fairway, fairways and greens for him. He's a pretty good look. And then Brian Stewart, not really a guy too many people think about. He shot a 68 4-under today. He's from Jackson, Michigan, played his college golf at Oakland University. So he's a guy that's played this course a lot. And this is just the second year at Detroit Golf Club for this event. So Brian Stewart off to a good start. Good start for Kevin Kisner. And then Ty Hatton, who leads the PGA Tour in strokes gained this year. He's only three shots off the pace. And if that stays true, you'll probably get a pretty good price on him Friday night to bet on him heading into the weekend.
What about a guy like Bryson DeChambeau? And I say that because he's one of the heaviest hitters on tour right now. And the total yardage for this course, just over 7,200. I believe it is on hole number 4. It's a par 5 that's like 635 yards. You like him at all this weekend?
Yeah, DeChambeau, he's 5-under through 14. So he's also got a shot here at being the first round leader. And he's actually had top 10 finishes in all three events since the return. Dude just grips it and rips it, and I kind of love it. You know, he's not worried about getting the right yardage number for his second shot. He just wants to hit it as far as he possibly can, then figure it out from there. If it's the, you know, if the putter's working, DeChambeau is a guy that can win any week, and maybe this will be the week here as he's off to a nice start on Thursday.
Yeah, he's been one of the more colorful guys to cover throughout the course of the year, especially since the comeback, putting on 40 pounds of positive weight as well over this quarantine period, too. So a really interesting personality, no doubt about that. All right, Adam, transitioning into some baseball talk now as we examine this baseball scene, which it seems like just about everybody will get going tomorrow or into the weekend. No major dominoes have fallen just yet. There have been a couple of guys who have decided that they're not going to play this year. You know, Ian Desmond, Ryan Zimmerman, Mike Leake. You know, guys that are decent players, but not exactly top-notch superstars at this stage in their careers. But as we examine what's going on here the past week, how much do you think we're going to learn over the first week of this summer camp spring training 2.0? And how much of that do you think could affect the betting markets next week?
Yeah, I think we're going to find out a lot. And just on the Mike Leake thing real quick, that's actually addition by subtraction for Arizona. Mike Leake would have been the highest paid player with these prorated salaries, would have been the highest paid player for the full season too. They probably would have felt like they had to use him in some capacity. Not using him with the other starters that they have in place, I think actually helps Arizona quite a bit. So I do kind of like them here in this 60-game sprint format out there in the NL West, but that'll be a big thing here. You know, not only finding out who's going to sit out, but also maybe guys that already had positive tests that are kind of placed on the restricted list already. We've seen a few of those with a couple of different teams here. I think Washington maybe was a team that released. They put guys on that list. They didn't explain the reasons why. That's probably the reason why. Injuries, you know, guys coming back off of injuries, like a James Paxton for the Yankees. How does he look throwing? Aaron Judge for the Yankees, same thing. How does he look taking swings? Because, again, I mean, you know, you've got 60 games here instead of 162. So some injury-prone players may be able to stay healthy. Maybe these won't be the 60 games that they would have been hurt for. So you wonder about some of those guys coming back, some of the guys that maybe, you know, had Tommy John prior to the 2019 season are now about 18 months removed from it, stuff like that. And also, too, something I thought was pretty interesting was Luis Rojas, the manager for the New York Mets, basically came out and said, look, you know, if we get a positive test, it's 3 weeks that that guy's going to be away from the ball club, maybe training on his own, depending on the symptoms. But 3 weeks is, you know, a large chunk of the season here. So if more teams adopt that sort of philosophy where they're not just going to do 2 weeks, they're going to do 3 weeks to keep everybody safe, that's a big chunk of the year. So I think kind of finding out what teams' individual plans are when they get positive tests, because they're going to, I think that's something that's going to be really interesting to find out.
Adam, tell me if I'm digging too deep into this here, but, you know, as Bull kind of mentioned, there are no big dominoes as far as players go have, you know, said that they will not play this season. Does, you know, managers or coaching staff members deciding that they won't be a part of the team for the season, even if they're just doing remote work or whatever the case may be, does that factor in to the betting market at all or not so much?
No, I don't think so, because a lot of times it's going to be, you know, maybe position coaches or, you know, replay coordinator or something like that. Maybe a pitching coach here or there. In some respects, it might actually be beneficial, because I'm a guy who's really big into sabermetrics and advanced statistics and all those kinds of things. Maybe some of the older coaches not being there will give some younger, maybe brighter and fresher minds the opportunity to have a little bit more input. So I think it could honestly be on the flip side of that equation, where it may end up being a positive for some of these teams. And I guess one other thing I should mention, I believe I saw today Mike Trout's wife is pregnant. I think Bryce Harper's wife is pregnant. That's also a consideration here too. I mean, a lot of baseball players are going to have pregnant spouses, significant others. Maybe those are guys that opt not to play, or, you know, will opt to be away from the team in the lead up to the birth of their children. So that's a factor too. And one of the reasons why I just think betting futures, betting win totals, all that kind of thing, are just a major crapshoot here for this season.
Very difficult to dispute that. And I know you mentioned that last week as well. It is absolutely going to be looked at as a crapshoot for sure. All right, Adam, before we wrap things up, one of my favorite parts of the summer, a typical summer that is right around this time of the year, you put out your home field advantage for college football. It's a very detailed article and a very detailed piece of information. Right now, that's kind of in a holding pattern like everything else in the middle of this pandemic. So any idea how that could change over the next 4 or 5 weeks, just because we don't really know how college football and these home games are going to be handled, but that could drastically affect home field advantage as we get closer to kickoff of the 2020 season.
Yeah, it really could. And, you know, I mean, obviously the expectation is that all of these venues will be empty. You know, they won't have fans in the stands, won't have fans or students in the fan or in the stands for this stuff. To me, I mean, that probably cuts the home field at least in half. But one of the interesting things that I saw earlier this week with regards to the NFL is that some NFL teams are talking about traveling same day. They're talking about leaving in the morning, getting there to play the game if it's a close by game, and then leaving right after the game, not even staying in a hotel or staying in that city, anything like that. That may actually bump the home field advantage back up a little bit. I don't know if colleges will do this because of the logistics of taking so many players on the road with you. Maybe road travel squads are taken down a little bit. But that would be something that could actually bump home field advantage back up just because it's such an unconventional way of doing things. I mean, in most leagues, I know the NBA has a rule like this. I believe the NHL does too. You have to be in the city that you're playing in the night before. So I don't think the NFL or college football necessarily have that. But a lot of these teams like to get there, get settled, all that kind of thing. If you're doing game day travel and stuff like that, that completely dictates home field advantage and changes a lot of things around, especially if you're talking about, you know, time difference changes, playing in altitude like in the Mountain West, something like that. I have no idea right now what's going to happen with my home field advantage numbers for college football or really what home field advantage will look like in the NFL either. It's just another one of those fluid situations we've got going on here.
Right, because what we see right now could be totally different in 6 weeks. It's just bizarre what we're going through right now. Adam, we always appreciate the time, always appreciate the insight. Hopefully you and yours have a wonderful and safe holiday weekend. We look forward to catching up with you again next week.
Absolutely, man. You take care.
Thanks, Adam. Again, that's Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and BangTheBook.